Chapter 21. The Dark Liquid, the Magic Pistol, and the Temple of Man. Today. It's still black. Adam looked into his coffee cup with trepidation. It's coffee, Vivian replied. Yeah, I know it's coffee. I've had coffee before. It's a black, opaque liquid. It's evil. Vivian had taken him to a cafe at the edge of the park. They were surrounded by a sea of comfy chairs, large sofas and trendy young people. Whilst Adam had wanted to get moving straight away, Vivian had insisted he at least take a little break to give his ribs a bit more time to heal. He was now glad he'd relented. It was nice to talk and joke with his old friend after such a long time. The barista, who had brought them their drinks, was watching them suspiciously from the corner of his eye. When was the last time you tried coffee? Vivian chuckled. 1782, I think. Somewhere around that, Adam replied. Well, it's got a lot better than that since, trust me. Adam lifted the cup to his face, crinkling his nose. It still smells burnt. You can't die, Adam! Even if I were trying to poison you, it wouldn't take. Hurts getting it out of your system, though. Adam brought the cup to his lips and took a reluctant sip. He gagged slightly. Vivian laughed as Adam began frantically opening small packets of milk, pouring them directly into his mouth. The barista tutted loudly and took his disapproval out on the cappuccino machine, buffing the frother nozzle hard. So, what made you come here? Asked Adam, dribbling through a mouthful of milk. Oh, I don't know. I just felt like a change. I kept getting pestered by English royals. Vivian adopted a posh English accent. Oh, lady, the French are coming. It's England's hour of need. Oh, lady, the Dutch are coming. Now is the time to save us. Oh, lady, the Germans. Besides, you kept telling me I should move. Adam laughed. They're not all bad. Have you met the current one? Queen Elizabeth, I mean. She's a lovely old girl. Actually, she wanted me to send her apologies for the awful way her lot have treated you over the years. Vivian pursed her lips so tightly that they went white. Anyway, said Adam quickly. He reached for the pistol from inside his golden coat. Why does Excalibur look so different? Don't take it out here, are you mad? Vivian exclaimed, pulling Adam's hands away from his coat. All right, but why the change? Vivian hesitated. Look, after Nottingham, I decided I didn't want to keep the sword anymore. It seemed like more trouble than it was worth. So I gave it to my father for safekeeping until you needed it. But you took ages, so I went back to get it when I came here. I told him I was unlikely to bump into any wannabe English monarchs, but that a frightening number of people had guns in this country. I suppose that's why he tinkered it into that. There was an uncomfortable pause. Do you still think about Nottingham? Asked Adam. Every night. Vivian had been sipping Adam's discarded coffee and was now staring intently into the cup. It was as if she was trying to reheat the liquid with her eyes. You know, I remember everything. I even remember being born. I've lived and seen so much. But that was the worst time of my life. It's the only time I ever really wished I could die the traditional way. Adam reached across the table and gently squeezed Vivian's hands. He could still remember freeing them from bonds, burnt and bruised. Well, that's the thing about living forever, said Adam. Given time, we'll experience it all. The good, the bad, and the ugly, Vivian smiled. Adam was slightly confused by her choice of words. It seemed an odd combination, but he nodded along. You know, continued Adam, Diana will realise you helped me. It might be better for you to hide in the sea for a while. She won't find you there. Vivian snorted. I'm not Lady of the Sea. I'm Lady of the Lake. Let her try. If she dips even one toe into my waters, the power will shift. Don't worry about me. Anyway, what do you think of Excalibur 2.0? I don't know. You won't let me take a proper look at it, said Adam rather childishly. Vivian rolled her eyes. Oh, take it out under the table then, subtly. Not your strong suit, I know. Adam did what he was told and peered at his new weapon under the table. The barista began pacing up and down behind the bar. What were they doing? It was decorated with metalwork, a tableau of hammers and tongs, fire and anvils, and a hand. A thin, silvery hand was embossed just in front of the hammer. Three runes surrounded the hand, one of thunder, one of fire, and the third looked like a trident. It's beautiful work, mused Adam, turning it over in his hands. Made of the same metals? Naturally. Don't suppose it comes with instructions? Adam asked, the barrel gleaming silver between his fingers. Well, you seem to have got the hang of it already. You point it at things you want to leave you alone and then pull the trigger. It's actually powered by Olympian lightning and hellfire, said Vivian, proud of her father's work. But is it still a compass? Adam asked anxiously. Of course, said Vivian, taken aback. So you finally did it? You found the name where she is being held? Yes, I broke into heaven a couple of days ago. Vivian spat out some of the coffee. Adam ignored this. The barista did not. I must be on the right track, as it's been a long time since the management sent a former goddess after me. You broke into heaven, hissed Vivian, oblivious to the barista's loud tutting. Bloody risky poking your nose in there. What if Michael had caught you? I didn't see him. Anyway, that's not the point, said Adam, excited. I've got the name. 900 years of dead ends and scraps of information, but this is it. Vivian smiled. Adam's enthusiasm was infectious. Well, you know what you have to do now, don't you? She asked, grinning broadly. Oh, God, I don't know if I remember it, Adam said. Oh, you do. Come on, say it. Vivian was laughing now. Oh, it was always so lame. Can't you do it? You're his daughter. I'll just put the name on the end. Vivian gave Adam a raised eyebrow in response. Oh, all right then. Adam paused, recalling the last words he heard from the king imprisoned in heaven. Take the name I have given you. Use the compass the lady still keeps for you. Find the temple and free her. The Temple of Man. Adam took a deep breath and began. O mighty Excalibur, forged by the great god Vulcan, please will you let this humble blind peasant see his way. Point me to the Temple of Man. Adam had said this incantation rather too loudly. A few of the cafe's patrons turned around. The barista was now nervously drying the same cup over and over. Adam looked under the table. Vivian shifted slightly, positioning herself so she could look too. They examined the pistol together. The hand by the hammer had moved. It was now pointing one finger. It had also seemingly loosened itself and had begun to wobble slightly. Adam spun the pistol under the table, but the finger kept pointing in the same direction. East, confirmed Vivian quietly. Adam immediately jumped to his feet, still clutching the gun. Yes, it works! It works! We did it! Pandemonium erupted. The barista, who had already dialed 9-1 on his cell phone, now hit the extra 1. Customers began to rush out, tripping over each other in the process, the bell above the door ringing continually. Oh dear, said Adam, realising what he'd done. Well, it's been lovely to see you, Vivian. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I met up with Prometheus as well. It's a shame we couldn't have all got together and had a little Camelot reunion. Adam kissed Vivian on the cheek and headed towards the exit. You what? Cried Vivian. You're only bringing this up now. How is he? He's good, said Adam as he reached the exit. A patron who had not yet made it through the door cried out in alarm. After you, said Adam, politely gesturing with his gun. The patron hesitated, unsure if this was a trap, before scuttling out. Adam continued, well, he was good. He was teaching, but then I turned up and kind of ruined his life. He might still be in the city. If he drops by, will you tell him I'm sorry again? He didn't wait for a response. The bell above the door rang as Adam tore through it, gun still in hand. Bye. Bye. Vivian watched as Adam ran happily out of the cafe, oblivious to the yells and screams of pedestrians. Do you mind telling me what the hell was going on there?
It was the barista who had taken refuge behind the counter during Adam's gun demonstration.
Oh, nothing to worry about, said Vivian, trying not to laugh again. Sorry for disturbing your patrons. It's not a real gun. He's a thespian. You know the sort. Not a danger to anyone, I promise. Now, do you mind if I pay and change again?
The barista watched, speechless, as Vivian retrieved a rather damp tote bag from under the table. She knew she should head back soon. She'd clearly outstayed her welcome in this establishment, and she didn't like to be away from the water for too long. But she was enjoying herself. She finished Adam's coffee, pondering what a strange day it had been. She had known Adam for 5 periods in her life. They weren't easy periods, but they were certainly never boring. He would always turn up in some new place, in some new garb, living a different life. But whatever name he went by, though in her heart he would always be Arthur, he was the same. Unbroken, unrelenting, evergreen. She was so engrossed in her thoughts that she didn't hear the bell above the cafe door ring again. She only raised her eyes when the chair that Adam had just left was pulled back. June Friday sat down opposite the Lady of the Lake. We need to talk, said June with a killer smile. Adam was grinning from ear to ear, running as fast as his bruised but rapidly healing body would allow. This wasn't the panicked sprinting from his chase with Diana. This was closer to skipping. He had Excalibur. He had the name, and now he had a direction. Adam had spent so long listening to whispers, prophecies, and even tricky coyotes, but this was certain, tangible, an actual finger pointing the way. Adam tore down the New York avenues. The sun was getting lower in the sky behind him. He surreptitiously checked Excalibur. The little silver finger was pointing ahead of him, pointing straight towards the ocean. With an optimism he hadn't felt for 1,000 years, Adam reached the harbour. He'd take the first ship heading east. The last time he'd crossed the Atlantic by boat, it had taken months. But if these modern vessels were anything like planes, Eve would be in his arms before breakfast. Epilogue. It was 3 in the morning in New York, and at 616 West 57th Street, Pete, UCL philosophy professor, oldest of the gods and keen Scrabble enthusiast, was sitting in the Devil's Library, poring over both ancient tombs and the hacked emails of June Friday. He'd been searching for hours to no avail. He'd swapped from gin to coffee and was beginning to regret it.
Any luck? Lucy bounded into the library like a cat with a secret.
No.
Where have you been? Pete asked, sliding his gold-framed glasses back up his nose.
I've been spying with my drone, Lucy said with a smile. What do you make of that?
With a flourish, he pulled a sheet of paper from behind his back and slammed it down on the table. It was a green-tinted, slightly pixelated photo. It had been taken from above and was looking down at the front door of a large white house. There was a dark van in the driveway, and standing round it some figures, too small to make out.
"What's this?" Pete asked.
"June's Arizona mansion!" Lucy sounded positively giddy.
"I can't make the people out,"
Pete squinted. "Boom!" Lucy slammed more photos down. Pete flicked through them. Each one showed a blown-up image of a familiar face.
"Well, I never... June, Anna, Diana, Amy. See Amy's right hand? She's holding on to someone," Lucy squealed.
Michael?
Michael, Lucy whispered. He let a final photo slip from his fingers. It floated down like a feather.
It was taken from a different angle, but the same location.
Amy had her hand on the chest of an imposing figure encased in armour with a pair of white wings neatly folded behind him. "Amy's controlling Michael," breathed Pete.
"Amy's controlling Michael," Lucy punched the air. "The power of love."
"And June is controlling Amy?" Pete stood up.
"And June is controlling Amy!"
Lucy now seemed to be dancing on the spot.
"But what has this got to do with Adam?" Pete asked.
Lucy slowly stopped dancing.
"Well, that's what I'm hoping you'll figure out."
Lucy let out a sigh.
"I mean, Amy's basically been under our sister's thumb since the garden. Every time I checked in on her, she seems less and less herself."
"Yes, she does. When you showed me her in the car, that was the first time I'd seen her since Greece. She looked broken."
After Pete's words, the two brothers sat in silence for over a minute.
Wait, what did you say before?"
A thought was forming in the old professor's head.
"I'm hoping you'll figure it out. Before that, June is controlling Amy. Before that, the power of love?"
"Yes, the power of love. First love, broken."
Pete and Lucy stood at the centre of the Devil's Library. It was a perfect circle. The mosaic floor depicted a garden surrounded by flames. They'd been searching for hours, but it was Faust who had eventually found what they were looking for. He'd come shuffling up to them, looking very pleased with himself, waving a scroll about his head, screaming,
"First love! Found it! Beat you this time, you smug bastard!"
The scroll was now positioned at the centre of the circle, still bound with twine.
"They couldn't just let us read them, could they?" Lucy drawled.
"I'm afraid not," replied Pete. "I've yet to meet a seer who didn't like a bit of showmanship."
"You do the honours, then."
"Oraculum pate facio."
With these words from Pete, the scroll unbound, sprung open and stretched aged brown parchment over the entire circumference of the circle, encasing them in a paper tube. The canvas at first appeared blank, then slowly, as if by an invisible hand, a face was drawn before them in jet black ink. A face which began to speak, its words spilling around the circle. When the Mother Earth was young, there was only need for a few gods. As the primordial garden grew more complex, more gods were needed. But when the designer created man, the first family's numbers swelled even more.
"Oh, have mercy! Is she going to do the whole origin story? I do wish prophecies came with a fast-forward function."
Lucy sighed, rolling his head back on his shoulders. Pete shushed his impatient brother and returned his attention back to the ink-blot face. Then discord arose. The decider thought man should have woman.
"Discord? Who wrote this?"
Lucy bristled. With the birth of woman, the creator's favourite daughter was born, the goddess of love. And with her birth, she in turn bore her original creation, first love. And for a time, all was well. Woman and man looked out across the garden and saw that it was good. They went to the creator to tell him that the walls were ready to come down. Time could begin. But the creator did not agree. Perfection was not yet reached. They must remain. Man obeyed, whilst woman bristled, believing this was the wrong decision, and a rebellious fire grew within her. She took Adam to the tree of knowledge and had him eat. His eyes were opened. The garden was ready, regardless of the creator's will. They went to the decider, who knew they would come. The three in turn went to the designer, oldest of them all. He listened to what they said and saw it was right, though he feared what their rebellion might bring.
pain, conflict, war. The decider gave man and woman fire to burn down the walls of the garden. Time started in haste, and the world began. The creator, angered by what he saw, punished man and woman with immortality and separation. The maintainer took the woman and hid her for eternity. This tearing of the two halves crippled first love, and without its power, the love deity began to falter. In her weakened state, love was easily controlled by the queen of the gods, who had always been jealous of her place in the creator's heart. But hear me well. If the two halves become whole again, if Adam finds Eve, then first love will be restored. The goddess of love will no longer falter, and her strength will be restored. The face and surrounding words dissolved back into the parchment. The paper walls fell, and the scroll rebound itself on the floor in the center of the circle. The decider and the designer, once Prometheus and Lucifer, now Pete and Lucy, finally understood.
If first love is restored, then June will lose her control over Amy, said Pete.
Without Amy, she'll have no control over Michael. And without him, June's rebellion is doomed to fail, Lucy continued.
The brothers looked at each other.
Adam must find Eve.
That was it, the final chapter of Evergreen, book one of the Everman trilogy. Thank you so much for joining me and Catherine on this incredible ride and adventure. We could not have done it without you, and this is just the beginning, we hope, for this project. We hope to try and get this to publishers, get a book that you can actually hold in your hand, and yes, continue the story of Adam looking for Eve. None of this would have been possible without your support, your reviews, your comments, and your donations. They have been unbelievably generous and have kept us going throughout this entire process. We'd like to thank every single person from the bottom of our hearts who donated to this story, who supported this story, and who shared this story. Now that it is done, please, if you think anyone that you know would be interested in fantasy or would like to give this a listen, send them the link. You can send them the podcast series to the YouTube playlist, and they can listen right from the beginning and binge the whole thing like your favorite season of Netflix. Once again, thank you so much for listening. I have been Sam Russell, the writer of Evergreen. And of course, one more final special thank you to my mother, Catherine Russell. We were two artists, a comedian and an actress, who couldn't work during the pandemic. And if you've ever been around a creative, you know when they can't do the thing that they love, they get a little bit crazy. This was our creative outlet, our way of reaching a new audience and doing what we love. Telling stories and hopefully making people laugh. Thank you again.